Pensacola, Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Mr. Chairman, I don't, but I think that we had an agenda item as it relates to discretionary. I want to get a clear understanding tonight of what we can and cannot spend money on in terms of our discretionary, because there's some things I have a waiting to put on the agenda. And my reply back from staff and legal, no one has a clear answer on what we can and cannot do. So I want to make sure we have that conversation with the clerk tonight.
Lumen May asking for clarification with Pam Childers, the clerk and comptroller, for the discretionary spending policy. So Mike Kohler, that, you know, this is at the last meeting. So Mike Kohler is asking, you know, hey, can you maybe talk about it for us a little bit?
Madam Clerk, are you willing to have that discussion at the end with us? I did not know about this till now, but do you mind having that conversation?
I've put everything I had to say in writing. You can look at it. You've got an attorney. You need to follow your attorney's rules. We have talked. We have come up with a policy. There are obviously things that I will not pay. You know what those are. I've put it in writing.
I love it. Well, you can read, can't you? Oh, man. Wow. Okay, so just a little follow-up to this.
Okay, we'll have a discussion.
Mr. Chairman, it's not for me to have the conversation with the clerk. It's for us to have a conversation with staff and legal.
Sure.
To process things that need to be paid. And so I want to make sure that we have a clear understanding from our administration and our legal what can and cannot be processed.
Okay, we'll add that at the end of the agenda. Thank you, Commissioner May.
Yeah, there's some things that are not going to get paid is what this means. Now, you might not remember, but back in April, in the beginning of April, this sort of came up because Pam Childers was raising questions about the legitimacy of the purposes for which the $50,000 per commissioner discretionary fund was being used. And, you know, the discretionary fund gets used for clubs and events and churches and charities. And, you know, in the old days, I remember it'd be like, you know, well, Stephen wants to spend $500 on, I don't want to name anybody particularly, but for example, you know, it'd be like the Tate High cheerleaders or the Tate High basketball, because he's from the North End, you know, and then Jeff Bergage would be like, I'll add 500 to that. And Robert Bennett would be like, I'll add 250. You know, and like, it was just kind of this, that's how the money got spent a lot of times is, you know, well, you know, I'll give you this, you give me this, we'll give these things, we'll do a good stuff. And Pam Childers says,
looking at this in a different way, taxpayers do not pay taxes for the county to make donations to private organizations of their choosing to enhance the mission of that organization.
Yeah, it's not a private benevolence fund. And this is back in April, she said this, and we've been raising these concerns for quite some time. And yeah, it's a weird thing. I mean, if they want to give privately, then, you know, give privately. That's wonderful. But, you know, the idea that you're going to use government money that was taken from people's property taxes in order to do nice things for a team or a choir or an activity or whatever, it's weird.
Also, there is a specific prohibition in Article 1 of the Florida Constitution preventing revenue from being taken from the public treasury to aid any church or religious denomination. If the commissioners want to support those organizations, a personal contribution is more appropriate.
Right, right. Exactly. And, you know, I know this was disturbing to some of the commissioners. This is not an old policy, by the way. This has only been around since like 2016, 2017.
And that's fine. Madam Clerk, I mean, we're going to respect you write the checks. But, I mean, it's certainly alarming and disappointing that we've done it for 10 years. And at this point now, we're beginning to do a review in which we've helped multiple organizations, which I'm not a lawyer.
And that's his argument, is we do good. This stuff all does good.
All right.
And Pam, I'm good with that. And listen, Pam brought it up. Is it not a common good to feed people? Is it not a common good to buy hamburgers and hot dogs for children in the inner city that don't have food to eat?
It's not, actually. It's the difference between a common good and a particular good. And it's not that government can't engage in particular goods, but you have to be very careful about how you dispense money to individuals. Because what seems like a good program to benefit individuals, as opposed to roads that benefit all, okay, or fire and police protection that benefits all, a community good or a park that benefits all, the problem with giving anything to individuals is it lends itself to political favoritism. It lends itself to abuse. It lends itself to quid pro quo. I'll give you this, you give me that. There's all kinds of problems, even aside from the question of the legality of giving to religious organizations, which Florida has a much more robust prohibition on this than even the U.S. Constitution has. We'll come back to this in a second because it's really interesting where we're going on this. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
If you're on Highway 90 going southbound right at Woodbine, we've got an accident that just occurred there. I'm seeing backups southbound on Woodbine. No road blockage, but we're just going slow through the area. Other than that, I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So I'm going to give you a little bit of the history here because it's, again, I think this is a really important moment in Escambia County where Pam Childers is trying to bring a little bit of reform to what the county commissioners do with that $250,000 every single year. She writes, this is back in April, okay? May 1st letter. The discretionary fund spending at issue here are those paid to private organizations, and whether taxes assessed and revenues collected by the county are expended under this method for a county public purpose. She goes on, when discretionary funding became a budget line item, she started having conversations with Allison Rogers, county attorney, back and forth. Then we had the problem in 2021 of the retirement funds, and it all kind of ground to a halt. There's been no progress since, and now she's come back to this. No policy established, no known written guidance provided to commissioners. Therefore, the request to give money to private organizations currently resembles more of a generosity handout by a commissioner as opposed to identifying a need to be met by county government. She's exactly right. It's, you know, big man on campus, feel good about donating to these organizations. And it's not that any of these organizations are bad. It's just that this is a bad practice for government. She says taxpayer dollars must be spent by the Escambia County Board of County Commissioners on a county public purpose. Commissioners' approval to spend their discretionary allotment have all resembled a noble cause. However, when you spend ad valorem revenues, property taxes, the law requires more than a noble cause. Taxpayer dollars should be used for the common interests of the people of Escambia County. Public dollars should not be spent to gain favor, to deliver a seat at an event like tickets, to show support for someone else's cause or mission, to provide Christmas gifts to children, to add to the funding for a school softball team's travel to the championship, to assist the mission of the church to feed their parishioners and other community guests, or provide a donation to a fundraiser hosted by the not-for-profit. These are all good reasons to make a personal donation. Funding from the general fund coffers, the people's money should be for the mission of county government. Absolutely. She's correct. The post-payment review that she performed demonstrates that the risk level for misuse is very high. If the practice continues, I, as the county's auditor, will heavily scrutinize the expenditure to ensure that it meets an identified county public purpose and is otherwise in compliance with the law. Should I not agree the mission of the county government will be served through the expenditure, the payment will be denied. Section 129.09 states that, quote, any clerk acting as county auditor who shall sign any warrant for the payment or to pay any claim against the county not authorized by law shall be personally liable. She has to withhold payment if she thinks it's not legal. This statute was emphasized time and time again by the county during the three-year litigation and the 401A private pension litigation. Okay, so this is all familiar territory, or at least it should be. She goes on in a subsequent letter describing her review. Is this April 23rd? I think this was slightly prior to that other one. Discretionary fund allocations in Escambia County tend not to be larger expenditures for items like sidewalks, lighting, stormwater improvements within a commissioner's district. Instead, public funds budgeted in the account aid to private organizations are usually expended in smaller increments, $1,000 to $5,000. From October 1st, 2020 through present, over $600,000 in public funds have been expended from the public treasury for commissioners' discretionary. And here's some examples she gives. And let me say in advance, highlight, she would say the same thing. None of the listed agencies are bad causes. They're just not, probably, she says definitely, not legitimate public money to be given to causes. Let me be clear about that. $3,000 to WSRE TV Foundation to purchase wine glasses, run advertisements, and secure the, including on our station, and secure the appearance of chefs for the 33rd WSRE PBS Wine and Food Classic. $5,000 to Jubilee Church for back to school backpack giveaway. $8,500 to Impact 100 Pensacola Bay Area for a 20th anniversary celebration to pay for beverages, hors d'oeuvres, cocktail supper, and food vendor staff. $2,500 to Escambia County Sheriff's Foundation to help fund the fallen Memorial Plaza, and $1,000 to Gonzales Baptist Church for a community picnic. You can't fund evangelism. You can't fund wine. You can't. And again, they're all fine enough causes to use private money for. It's just not general fund money. That's what she's getting at. When the public funds, she writes, are being given to aid a private organization, such as the case with expenditures or donations from commissioners' discretionary funds, there must be a, quote, clearly identified and concrete public purpose as the primary objective and a reasonable expectation that such purpose will be substantially and effectively accomplished. That's from a court case, O'Neill versus Burns. The bar may seem high, she writes, but it is necessary because public funds are being given to private persons or organizations. So, it's an elemental principle that when the government levies and collects taxes for a purpose, it must also spend that revenue for the same purpose. So, for example, we're not supposed to give money to schools. Schools have their own funding source. Ad valorem tax are not supposed to go to schools. Consequently, when the county levies and collects taxes for county purposes, it must also spend that revenue for county purposes. Some of the key powers that are on target county purposes for appropriate spending: provide and maintain county buildings, provide fire protection, provide hospitals, ambulance service, and health and welfare programs, provide parks, preserves, playgrounds, recreation areas, libraries, museums, historical commission, and other recreation cultural facilities and programs, provide and administer programs of housing, slum clearance, community redevelopment, conservation, flood and beach erosion control, and air pollution control, and perform other acts not inconsistent with law, which are in the common interest of the people of the county. All right, so, and, you know, wages, jails, buildings, parks, computers, things that, you know, service all that stuff. And then she goes on in the review, and she talks about particular cases, and then, you know, what's her recommendation to fix all of this. Discretionary fund, number one, this is in the long review. Discretionary fund donations to private organizations, to a private organization were used to purchase 552 wine glasses. That's the WSRE event. She recommends the board should require greater detail regarding the items purchased or the services provided through the expenditure of public funds. Number two, individual sponsorship recognition of the use of public funds. She talks about Commissioners Bagosh and Bender both funding the Impact 100's 20th anniversary celebration, including items Bender for $1,000, Commissioner Bagosh $7,000. Both items approved unanimous votes. Records provided the clerk connected with the payment. The item includes correspondence from Impact 100 that they would get. One, recognition at the event as an event sponsor. So public funds being spent through discretionary money, and Bagosh or Bender would get public recognition as the event sponsor. Event tickets. So, like, looks like campaign money, right? The way it's being used. Event tickets for two people. Payment records also demonstrate that former Commissioner Bagosh was denoted as a major sponsor, whereas former Commissioner Bender was an event sponsor. Again, I love Impact 100, but I don't think ad valorem taxes should be used to promote a county commissioner sitting as a major sponsor of an event. That is a campaign ad. There's no evidence that Bender returned the tickets, so that was not an issue. There's no evidence one way or the other about Commissioner Bagosh's tickets. Recommendation, based on this post-payment review and the apparent connection between the use of public funds for individual recognition, clerk's office recommends county's policy prevent receipt of tickets, individual campaign-like advertisements, or other individual benefits connected with the expenditure of public funds from the county's treasury. But even if you don't get a public announcement of it in the event, the meeting where you give out the money is an announcement, right? And by the way, one of the byproducts of this policy is if you're an outside agency doing charitable work and you know that you're going to get $1,000, $2,000, $5,000, $6,000, $8,000 from the county commissioner annually or from the county commission annually, do you criticize them? Do you come out in public and talk about them? Or are you more like, just let it slide because we need the money? I mean, that's the problem with a largesse fund, right? Is it raises those questions. Even if nobody's guilty, it makes it look like the appearance of impropriety. Observation three, discretionary funding using county tax revenue were expended for a school purpose. That's the backpack program. Let's see, $250 request from Booker T. Washington High School expended on uniforms and equipment for the softball team, $4,000 for Tate for umpires for baseball games, $1,000 for shoes at Booker T. Washington. Recommendation. Taxes levied for a county purpose should not be expended for a school purpose. The board should more closely inspect discretionary fund expenditures before approval. Number four, discretionary funds used to pay for a church event with gospel presentations. That is specifically illegal under Florida law. Aside from the First Amendment, specifically under Florida law. Let's see. This is Commissioner Berry using $1,000 for the Gonzales Baptist Church for a Cantonment community picnic that was for a stage rented for use for an evangelistic community picnic for gospel presentations, church members having multiple gospel conversations. Hey, I love the gospel. I want to see it promoted. Church does good things. Wonderful. Government shouldn't be supporting it. So there's a couple of others in here. The main idea, the main takeaway is accountability, do better, identify purposes. The bigger the amount, the more you have to justify it, and she's not going to pay anything that she thinks is not fully legal. And there's going to be a lot of surprised people, a lot of disappointed askers. And also, there should be a policy. Like, if you wanted to request money from the county, there's no policy. There's no button you can click. There's no application. You just got to know somebody and get their ear, and they pay attention to you, which is another form of appearance of impropriety, because it's very much a good old boy system rather than a good old online official application system, which is how it should be. Anyway, so good for Pam. We'll see where this all shakes out, but that's where it stands at the moment, and that's why they were all kind of surprised by it. John Pickens has traffic on the five. John?
That's right.
You look like you want to say something.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. That's the best thing for me right now.
All right.
I love it. All right, so if you're on the Highway 90 in Woodbine right now, we've got an accident there. It's moved off the side of the road, but still seeing some delays in the southbound lane. Also, Avalon Boulevard southbound headed toward I-10. Starting to see there are normal congestion delays there. And also, I-10, I-110 are rolling smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Here's today's Strength for Life.
Even though so many corporations are celebrating Gay Pride Month, my Christian faith just won't let me. After all, there are seven places in Scripture where homosexuality is addressed and condemned. And my heart genuinely breaks for individuals who are caught up in that lifestyle. I want to see them washed, sanctified, and justified, as is described in 1 Corinthians 6. I want to see them saved. No one loves the LGBTQ people more than Jesus does. No one is able to help them like he can. But for the Christian to celebrate Gay Pride Month is not love. 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, explains that love rejoiceth not in iniquity. It's saying Christians can't celebrate sin. Love doesn't do that. To celebrate any type of sin instead of warn against it is to personally escort individuals straight to hell. So Christian person, let us be loving enough to warn others about sin and invite them to the Savior.
For more Strength for Life, please visit our website, strengthforlife.church.
Looking for a stylish way to promote your brand or celebrate a special occasion? Prim and Proper in Gulf Breeze now offers custom hats, a new addition to their lineup of custom and promotional items. From corporate logos to personalized designs, these hats are perfect for businesses, events, team gear, or one-of-a-kind gifts. Prim and Proper is still your go-to for custom engraving and unique gifts. From personalized drinkware to engraved home decor, every item is crafted with care by their in-house experts. Visit primandproper.com for more.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimptastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit Davis Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Join Dawn from Ochsner Nuvot Health 65 Plus this Tuesday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. They're recognizing older Americans' contributions, highlighting aging trends, and reaffirming commitments to serve the older adults in our communities. Text or call in with your questions on how Ochsner Nuvot's Health 65 Plus can help. Tune in Tuesday.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Stream us online at newsradio923.com or download the News Radio Pensacola app.
Guess who?
Ha ha ha!
this one sounds like other songs you know, and you can hear the influence, right?
Well, she got her daddy's car, and she cruised through the hamburger stand now.
Oh,
see, she
man,
forgot all
so
about
good.
The library like she told her old man now.
With Brian Wilson, the Beach Boys, passing
and
away, thinking about his music. I mean, but I have to get to this part.
And she'll have fun, 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 till her daddy takes a T-Rid away.
Fun, fun, fun. I had somebody text in and say that they'd never heard of Beach Boys and Brian Wilson, and I thought they were making a joke. No, they're serious. They didn't know. And I, well, you know, you can't know everything. Sometimes you don't know a thing. I'm like, it's like not knowing the Beatles or John Lennon. Who? No, they didn't say that. But, you know, you can't know everything. It's just the way it is. The world is full of people. You know, I think I don't even know my dad would know who the Beach Boys are. And he lived through it. I don't know.
News. I'm CJ Papa. An air disaster in India. Fox's Craig Palcott in London.
7878 Dreamliner Boeing plane was taking off from a city called Ahmedabad. That is in the northwestern part of India. It crashed literally within about a minute after takeoff.
Local police reporting there appears to be no survivors. Destination, London's Gatwick Airport. 53 of the more than 240 people on board were British. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer saying his thoughts are with the passengers and their families at this deeply distressing time. President Trump on Truth Social this morning posting, LA was safe and sound for the last two nights. Our great National Guard, with a little help from the Marines, put the LA police in a position to effectively do their job. A curfew in parts of downtown LA in effect until 6 a.m. local time. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is 74 degrees right now. We've got partly cloudy skies this morning. A 35-year-old Pensacola man's accused of luring a boy over social media, then sexually battering him. Police say Rashad Supan was arrested last week on multiple charges. He's accused of lying about his age on social media to lure a minor to meet up with him for sex. Supan then allegedly picked that minor up in his vehicle, and the boy said during their encounter he'd performed actions that were against his will. Supan faces a litany of charges, including lewd and lascivious battery on a minor and several charges related to using a phone or computer to lure the boy. He's being held on a $150,000 bond in the Santa Rosa County Jail. An arrest has been made in the fatal shooting at the Pensacola Village Apartments last month. PPD says 34-year-old Antonio Ewing was taken into custody by U.S. Marshals in Tallahassee yesterday. Officials believe he fatally shot a man at the Pensacola Village Apartments on May 30th. Manny Diaz Jr. is set to receive a $643,000 salary as the interim president of the University of West Florida. That is pending approval today by the Board of Trustees. The salary is double his current earnings as Florida's Commissioner of Education, about $107,000 more than outgoing president Dr. Martha Saunders. Diaz's contract also includes allowances for automobile use, housing, and relocation. No performance incentives are in the contract, though, since his term is only set to be for 1 year. He was selected following Dr. Martha Saunders' resignation amid political pressure. His appointment was approved in an 8-2 vote by trustees. Florida's seen a significant decline in abortions from last year. State data shows 17,377 abortions were reported as of June 2nd. That is 45% fewer than a comparable period in 2024. The decrease comes after a law was enacted May of last year that prohibits most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. Survivors and family members of those killed in the Pulse nightclub massacre in Orlando were taken inside the nightclub where 49 people died yesterday. The site is now owned by the city of Orlando. Mayor Buddy Dyer says the tours are an attempt to help the families with healing.
We think first and foremost of the victims and the families and the survivors, and we do everything that we have done based on what is best for them.
Family members were also supposed to receive a final briefing from the FBI on that shooting from 2016, an official ceremony remembering the victims was also held yesterday. An upcoming trip could lure international business right here to the Sunshine State. Governor Ron DeSantis announced yesterday he is leading a delegation to France next week. He and others will be attending the International Paris Air Show. He says that trip will highlight Florida's status as a global hub for aerospace, aviation, defense, and emerging technology. The governor says his efforts on the trip will be to promote further investment into the state of Florida and bring more high-paying jobs here. It's 735 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
Brought to you by ECUA Bulk Waste Services. Now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. No accidents to report to you right now. If you are on Davis Highway going southbound toward Olive Road, I'm seeing a major delay right there in front of West Florida Hospital. Highway 90 is showing just minor delays at Woodbine due to that earlier accident, but I-10, I-110 are all flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We do have about a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon, high near 89 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 78. For Friday, 50% chance of rain, high near 88 degrees. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 77. Keeping that rain chance around on Saturday with a 60% chance of rain and a high near 88 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 77 degrees. Right now, it is partly cloudy in Pensacola. Our next news at 8 o'clock. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. As President Trump's 90-day tariff pause nears its end, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is signaling fresh openness towards shifting the deadline. He said for any of the U.S. 18 important trading partners that are negotiating in good faith, the Trump administration could roll the date forward to continue negotiations. French President Emmanuel Macron has made a pitch for his country to manufacture the most advanced chips in the world. Macron laid his ambition out for France to be able to manufacture semiconductors in the range of 2 to 10 nanometers. Camera company Insta360 has gone public in Shanghai's tech-heavy Star Market in the board's largest raise to date. The company counts the U.S. as one of its biggest markets. It's a sign of how China-based companies are still eager to expand globally, despite geopolitical tensions. Futures are moderately lower. Wednesday, the Dow lost 1. The NASDAQ down 99. The S&P 500 down 16. Once again, futures are moderately lower. That's Your Money Now.
Hello, this is Mary with Howard Young Flooring. Shopping for flooring can be a little overwhelming. At Howard Young Flooring, we are here to help you any way we can and answer any questions you may have so that you can make knowledgeable decisions. We understand the importance of each and every customer and would like to thank you for allowing us into your homes. For those we have not met, we hope to see you soon. Visit us today at 4333 Avalon Boulevard in Milton. We look forward to covering your future.
The Pensacola housing real estate market has been crazy for the past few years.
How do you know when to buy or sell?
You'll need an expert to help you. Tune into the Pensacola Expert Panel today at 9 a.m. right after Pensacola Morning News to hear real estate expert Christina Leavenworth with Leavenworth Realty discuss current real estate conditions. That's today at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
News Radio Pensacola has you covered no matter where you are or how you like to listen. Tune into our frequencies on 92.3 FM, 95.3 FM, and AM 1620 for the latest breaking news, local updates, and in-depth analysis. Can't be near a radio? No problem. Stream us live on our website or through our convenient app. Available for download on your mobile device. Plus, with our smart device integration, you can ask your virtual assistant to play News Radio 92.3, and we'll be right there with you. It's News Radio Pensacola.
We'll be right back.
we also have a policy that if you're driving on one of those streets and a mob comes and surrounds your vehicle and threatens you, you have a right to flee for your safety. And so if you drive off and you hit one of these people, that's their fault for impinging on you. You don't have to sit there and just be a sitting duck and let the mob grab you out of your car and drag you through the streets. You have a right to defend yourself in Florida.
Yeah, Governor DeSantis yesterday talking during a podcast with somebody about this issue of what can you do if you find yourself in a car surrounded by a mob or in a car with a freeway shut down like has happened in L.A. And, of course, we've had situations like this across the country, not as much in Florida, but I remember the George Floyd protests and even here in Pensacola where it was very tame by most standards. I think I can play this for you and it'll come across, but I remember a certain call to 911. Remember this guy driving across 3 Mile Bridge with a protester on his hood because he drove through the line? Joining us now, we have Mike Wood, the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. So let's just maybe for clarification's sake, because my opinion is that if somebody's kidnapping me in my car by standing in front of me, they're impeding traffic. They're clearly committing at least a misdemeanor. But if they're menacing or threatening me, hey, if I'd be justified in using physical force, I'm justified in using car force. That seems to be what the governor is saying. Is that accurate?
Well, you have to be careful because there's a fine line there. If somebody, let's go to a parking spot, somebody's saving a parking spot, and you pull in and they won't move out of that spot. They're not threatening you. They're just holding the spot. No, you cannot run over them. Same thing in a mob. If somebody is surrounding your vehicle, they're not touching it. They're not going for the door handles. They're not throwing rocks at it. There's a slippery slope there. You got to be careful. But if they start pulling on those door handles, they start beating the windshield, throwing rocks, and you feel in fear for your safety and those of your family or whoever else is in the car, then what the governor says does apply.
So I totally in the latter example, but if people are impeding my motion, like say I'm on the street and a crowd surrounds me and tries to, you know, impede me from leaving, I'm justified in using force to escape, right?
Again, that's a decision you're going to have to make. If they are actively trying to hurt you or damage your vehicle, make you fear for your safety, then yes. But if they're just blocking the road, then this is a situation where you need to stay in the vehicle, get on the phone and call 911 and get us headed that way. We should probably already headed that way anyway. But it's a personal decision that you have to make and that you have to be able to justify.
And you certainly have to be able to articulate a reasonable fear to your safety or your life or your limb. But, you know, I can imagine circumstances where you probably wind up catching a charge for it, and I can imagine circumstances where you definitely should not. Is that a fair way to say it?
Absolutely. If you fear for your safety and you're able to articulate that, that's what we're looking for. But we have to look for people who are going down there. They may be in opposition and they may be driving down there on purpose and want somebody to get in front of their car mm-hmm. and then accelerate and hit them. So this is where there's a fine line in there, and every situation is going to be dealt with and looked at very closely.
I just know, like, if I think about my wife being in her minivan caught in the middle of some protest, you know, and I'm basically my advice to her is if you feel scared, you get out. If somebody's in your way, that's their problem, which seems to be what the governor is saying.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If she fears for her safety, if she is scared, that's different. But if they're 20 or 30 feet from the car, they're blocking the roadway, they're not approaching the car, then that could be a different situation.
Got it. You can't just make a path, but you can escape, but you can't, attack, essentially, which is, you know, in so many of the things that we talk about, that's a fine distinction, but it's an important one in the law. I did want to, since we're kind of in this conversation about, you know, response to protests, response to riots, I had talked yesterday about I'd seen these the pepperball guns, and they looked to me like paintball guns. And that's because that's the closest shape that I know of. And, you know, I've only played paintball a few times. I find it too painful, quite frankly. I'd rather play airsoft. And it makes you dirty and all the other stuff. But it got me thinking that if you're looking for less lethal or non-lethal crowd control, it seems like paintball is actually not a terrible idea. You know, if somebody gets hit 4 or 5 times with a paintball, they're going to be discouraged. Plus, if you have people then identifying the criminals, right? If you have a couple of different officers with a couple of different colors, you know, you get tagged by, you know, purple, pink, and green. That's a guy who needs to be arrested. Is that, that's not something I've ever seen police actually use, though. Am I wrong? Is this not a functional solution?
We might use them or similar weapons or items like that for training purposes, but paintball guns are not effective crowd control. They do hurt. They do get your attention, but not like beanbag guns and things like that that are meant to cause pain to disperse crowds. But so that's not something that law enforcement generally uses, paintball guns. They will use these weapons that fire pepper balls, and those are effective.
Okay, so the problem with the paintball gun is it's just not enough for most situations.
Yeah, and you're talking about, you were speaking about an officer. One officer has blue, another one has green, another one has red. Well, that's fine, but once, you know, you get somebody that's, you've taken them into custody because he's got red on him, you know, an officer fired it. Well, what are you charging with? What did that officer see? There's just a lot of problems with that, trying to color code different offenses. So that's not something that we do.
you make me think of, like, you know, the red guy's there for the for the destruction of property, and the blue color there is for if you attack somebody. You know, I'm just joking in there, but I appreciate that. It may not be as practically useful as I, the non-law enforcement officer, had spiffballed. So fair enough. I'll take the advice. We're talking to Mike Wood, the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, hang on for just a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
No accidents to report to you right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Last Thursday, back to Mike Wood, last Thursday in the vicinity of Creighton and Scenic Highway, there was a closure of a road, there was a gun and a house and a wanted individual. What happened here?
Well, you know, it's Monday evening. I'm sorry. You got that right. It was on Creighton and near Forest Glen. We had a domestic violence call come out where we believe there was an armed man inside a home. He retreated in the home once officers got there and then refused to come out. And then we found out later that he wasn't refusing to come out. He left out the back door and was trying to hide in the neighborhood. Officers put the canine on the ground and was able to find him very quickly and take him into custody without further incident.
Okay, well, that's a good outcome. I'll take that outcome. You also have, and this is weirdly a good note on a horrible incident, but you and I talked last week about Pensacola Village. You'd had a shooting, a stabbing, and an actual homicide with a gun, but you now have, FDLE has made an arrest of that suspect?
Well, it was the marshals that got a hold of him in Tallahassee, and again, another arrest without incident. So he was fleeing, actively fleeing law enforcement, and they were able to catch up with him in Tallahassee yesterday and make that arrest.
Well, that's good. Good cooperation between agencies, and a reminder that, you know, just because somebody gets out of Escambia County or out of the city doesn't mean that they're free and clear, right?
No. We have an incredible partnership with lots of agencies, including the marshals, who are ready to help us out at any moment and have done so many times in the past.
Very good. We always like to end. Did I miss anything? Anything else happen? It seems like it's been, and you know, I know you hate the word quiet, but it's been relatively quiet other than the follow-up to an incident and the one incident last week.
Yeah, I use the word uneventful. Instead of the Q word, so I get all kinds of grief from those that I work with when I use the Q word. So I try to stay away from that.
It's been
very active the past couple of weeks, and finally we have a week here that's there's not a lot going on.
You're not telling me police are superstitious ever, are you at all?
No.
We always like to end with a did you know or a cop myth. Do you have one for me this week, Mike?
Yeah, this is one where the myth is that as long as you have one taillight or one brake light working, you're in good shape. And that's not true in the state of Florida, that you must have two working taillights, two working brake lights, and the license plate bulbs or illumination must be working. Officers typically will get in behind a vehicle, and if there's a violation, stop them, let them know, give them a warning, because a lot of times it's simply hard to walk around your car and see if the brake lights are working. You can put on the hazards and check that way, but there are some cars that have different brake and turn signal lights, so that won't work. So it's kind of difficult to know if you have a brake light out or not.
Okay.
But the officers will stop you and issue a warning on something like that. But you do have to have two of them functioning at all times, as well as the license plate light.
What about the other end of the car, the pedital, the headlight, that one headlight out? Is that legal, illegal?
Now you have to have both headlights working as well.
Okay, I figured, but I just wanted to double check. And then just because we're in this vicinity, and I know it sometimes applies to us because we carry bikes on the back of the car, what is the law on obscuring your license plate? Like with, for example, you know, you got bikes in a bike rack, it's hard to see the license plate. How does that work?
You're supposed to be able to see the license plate. You know, they make mounts that will go on the backs of those racks. A lot of times you see the scooters that are meant for folks that can't get around very well, and,
right.
and those mounts on the backs of the cars clearly have license plate mounts on them. That is a reason that you could be stopped, but we understand, too, that this is a temporary transport type situation. We can see the license plate. We can see the decal. We might not be able to read it all the way, but technically that is a violation, but it's not generally something you're going to receive a ticket for.
But duct tape over my license plate, that's probably going to catch a pullover, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's going to get our attention in a negative way. So if you do something like that, or if you put that dark tent over it,
right.
you're kind of asking for it at that point.
Follow, just because we're in this vicinity, the camera reader obscuring devices, the ones that put like a prism in front, like you're talking about having the darkened glass or whatever, I don't even know. I don't have one. I've always thought they were silly. But, you know, is that illegal in Florida?
Yeah, you can't. Nothing can obscure the license plate.
Got it.
And it doesn't matter what the device is or what the material is. It has to be. We have to be able to read it, and the cameras as well. And any attempt to stop that is a violation.
Excellent. Mike Wood, he is the public information officer for the Pensacola Police Department. Mike, as always, thank you for the time. Thank you for correcting me on what I was misguided about in terms of crowd control. I appreciate that. And we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks for the time.
Hey, no problem. The paintballs do hurt, just not effective for crowd control.
No kidding, they hurt. Thanks so much. 751.
Yes, they do.
On News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Your road to summer adventure starts with outstanding offers on new Subarus from Anderson Subaru. Get 3.9 for 72 on Outbacks and 3.9 for 48 on Foresters, or 2.9 for 48 on Crosstrek. Love is out there this summer. Find it at Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Subaru for you, Subaru for you. Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
At Pensacola Christian Academy, your child will thrive in a safe, caring environment designed to build a solid foundation. Kindergartners become confident readers, develop fine motor skills through cursive writing, and sharpen problem-solving skills with engaging hands-on learning. Experience the affordable excellence and unmatched value of Pensacola Christian Academy. Learn more at enrollpca.com/radio.
You're not going to want to miss tonight's county fair. I'm going
to
be...
We are your window to your community.
Did you see the last 5 minutes of that football game last night?
Oh, man, I saw the whole thing.
And a lifeline to keep you safe when danger is near.
Everybody who is listening needs to take cover as soon as they can. This is one of the biggest storms.
We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress you depend on your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
All of your local news and talk from dependable host Andrew McKay on your morning drive with Pensacola Morning News 5 to 9 on News Radio 92.3.
Is there a problem?
You're Abe Froman.
That's right. I'm Abe Froman.
The sausage king of Chicago.
Yeah, that's me.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409. Well, I save my pennies and I save my dimes.
Giddy up,
409.
There's the Make You Happy, John. To make
oh,
you super happy.
I was so happy. Oh, that's my happy place.
I love hearing that healthy car start at the beginning. That's good, too. All right. Of course, we are commemorating Brian Wilson, lead singer of the Beach Boys, and key in that band for so long, and just, you know, passed away yesterday at the age of 82. And you think about somebody who just, I mean, defined American music for so long, so many hits. And just, you know, it's funny. In my own brain, I had never quite thought of it the way when I was reading some of the articles yesterday, and they were saying that there was a, you know, there was a pretty robust discussion about who had more influence, Beatles or the Beach Boys. And, you know, I tend to think of the Beatles as tier A and Beach Boys as not tier B, but, you know, not at that level. But, I mean, when you think about it, the number of hits they've had, you know, the number of albums, the number of people who know their songs, it's not an unreasonable question.
And it was completely American, too.
Right, right. Like, yeah, not imported music, right.
Yeah, happening in America at that time.
And music about, like you say, right. About America, about, you know, American girls and American cars and, you know, wonderful stuff. John Pickens got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. One accident to let you know about if you are on Beulah Church Road and Mobile Highway. The road is blocked on Beulah Church Road, so just be aware of that. That actually just happened. First responders are on their way there. But again, that's Beulah Church Road and Mobile Highway. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. Oh, I got a note in here that the circumstance of my wife, you know, being stuck in a crowd that's menacing her and making her feel unsafe, and she can drive and escape through that crowd if she needs to, is exactly why we passed HB1 in 2021 for that same reason. That's the illustration that was used. A good way to distinguish between the cases is stand your ground versus Red Rover. You can't use your car as Red Rover to attack the line.
There you go. I like that.
But you do not have to sit there and endure the crowd menacing you, threatening you, surrounding you, you know, making you feel unsafe. Good distinction. Let's see. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
President Trump is hosting the Congressional Picnic today on the South Lawn of the White House. That's an annual tradition that brings lawmakers from both parties and their families together. One person, though, that will not be attending is Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, who found out he's apparently been uninvited when he went to get his tickets.
I think I'm the first senator in the history of the United States to be uninvited to the White House picnic. The White House is owned by the taxpayers. We all are members of it. Every Democrat will be invited. Every Republican will be invited, but I will be the only one disallowed to come on the grounds of the White House.
Paul's been somewhat outspoken in his opposition to the big, beautiful bill. So,
getting the old AP treatment, Rand Paul is, huh? You know, you don't get to be on Air Force One anymore. You don't get to be in the secret meetings anymore, the small meetings anymore, you know. Okay.
No ham and cheese for you. Sorry.
You know, honestly, though, I think, you know, Rand Paul probably is bragging about it. I mean, to him, it's both funny and also it's a badge of honor in his mind, I'm sure. So,
possibly, yeah.
He is Ron Paul's son. You know, there is a little bit of that streak in him.
A little bit. The search for a Washington state man accused of killing his three daughters is now entering its third week. Chelan County Sheriff's Office says they're changing their tactics in the search for Travis Decker, and they're now focusing on some specific leads. Closing arguments in the defamation trial of MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell could happen today. Lawyers for plaintiff Eric Coomer introduced their final witness yesterday. Coomer is suing Lindell over his claims that the former Dominion Voting Systems employee helped rig the results of the 2020 election.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 7:58 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, this is actually, you know, we're a military town, so we're always thinking about the impact of any changes made at the, you know, big DOD, Pentagon, big Navy kind of level, what it might have here. Now, this is not a Pentagon announcement. This is not even a DOD announcement, but this was very interesting. Defense One, one of my favorite military source websites, had an article about you have a guy who's a program manager at DARPA. That's the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. That's the folks who come up with all the crazy, wild inventions for the military. Greg Avicola was outlining a vision of a Navy strike force built entirely around not just an aircraft carrier, but a heterogeneous, that's a mixture of things, mix of robotic assets of varying size, role, and capability. Quote, I could imagine the battle group eventually becoming completely autonomous. Every time I get, you know, flag officers in front of me, I'm always asking them about the future of autonomous and remote operated planes because we train pilots here. They're always very, you know, no big deal, no jeopardy, nothing like that. But he says there's going to be a lot of experimentation. This is at the AWS summit in D.C. on Tuesday. If I make the vehicle look like this and I make the ship look like that, how does that pair? And how do I do the logistics? How do I do the refueling? How do I do the assured communication between those platforms? So what he's talking about ships, not planes. But he's saying, look, if I can buy, I don't know, a missile platform that floats that the ship for, say, $20 or $30 million, I don't need to put an Aegis you know, defense system on there. But I can have the destroyer in the middle, and I can have 20 of these ships, and they can then be a sort of mixed attack force that is like the swarm, the drone swarm around the plane, same kind of concept, but on the ocean or on the sea. Robot ships with missiles is kind of what they're talking about, and other, even underwater, but that's hard to communicate with them.
You're listening.